I'm chairing the debate tonight. We're going to have 3-minute opening statements from all of the candidates, and then I'll be opening questions to the floor. I'll take questions for either all of the candidates or for individuals. But if I do find that one individual is getting asked a lot of questions, I'm just going to stop taking questions for that individual. And also, if there's questions that are too similar, I'm going to move on. Just to let you know, the candidates will have 2 minutes to respond to questions, and we're going to be keeping that quite tight, so I'll bang the clock down when it's 30 seconds. And then at the end, we're going to have some quick-fire questions. So hopefully this will be a little bit more, a little bit less formal than the debate on Tuesday night, for those of you that came. But yeah, we're going to start in first name alphabetical order. So tonight we've got Mark, who's here for Abir McIntyre. So if you'd like to begin.
Good evening, everyone. As you can see, I'm not Abir McIntyre. Abir had very much hoped to be here this evening, but unfortunately, yesterday, whilst we were on the campaign trail, she received a phone call from a member of her family telling her that there was a family emergency. One of her relatives had taken a turn for the worse, and she has had to go home to spend time with her family, and I hope you won't hold that against her. And I'm sure you wish her and her family all the best. But that is why she isn't here. Had we had a bit more time, it would have been opportune to organise a video cast, because that's the kind of thing that Abir is committed to. She wants to be a 21st century rector. She wants to reach out to you in the ways that really allow you to make the most of your university experience. The reason that she is running is to do with, she has experience in two areas, and her present job is with Mary's Meals, which is a charity that feeds children in the developing world. Every day they give these children a meal, and that meal meets their immediate needs, but it is through that meal that they always serve that meal in a place of education. And the idea is that their immediate needs are served, but it allows them to get an education and to build their way out of poverty. So it's that passion for young people and a passion for education which motivates her to run for the role of rector. She wants to bring that to the university, and she wants to make sure that, like the children in the developing world, we have real access to education, and she wants to make sure that that's at the top of the agenda when if she becomes chair of the university court. It's all very well having a top-class university. It's all very well offering places to the best people who meet the criteria to come here. But if at the end of the day we can't afford to come here, or when we're here we don't have the costs of living are so much that we can't get the most out of our experience here, then that is a cause of great sadness for Abir, and something that she wants to strive to make sure that she can do the best as chair of the university court. She's realistic about what she wants to do. She believes that the university has something of a poison chalice because of the behaviour of successive governments. She fundamentally believes that education is about our future, and that we should invest in our young people, and that means that we should do everything. Sorry, how long is that? Okay, that means we should do everything possible to make sure that we can take up our education. She also wants to use her extensive experience as a journalist and broadcaster, grilling politicians, making heat chairing political debates, being hired for corporate work to do chairing, coupled with her experiences at Mary's Meals, working with governments and NGOs to get the most for young people. She wants to bring all of that to the table and make sure that she is an effective chair of the university court. Because ultimately, it is about us, the students. It's not about prestige or politics. It's about making sure that we are represented, and that's what she promises to do.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you very much for coming. I want just first of all to say what a privilege it is to stand as a candidate for the rectorship of this great university. But this is my second rectorial election. The first was in 1970 when we elected John Cleese as our rector. But I can tell you there won't be any silly walks tonight, or indeed a walk in the park. I've been called during this campaign the nice guy with the beard. Well, I'm glad about that. It's good. I've been here every day, and I've been talking to students every day. I've been engaging, and I've been learning. And as your rector, I want to be the guy you feel you can approach. But sometimes you don't need a nice guy. Sometimes you need somebody who can fight your corner, and I can be that guy too. Let me give you three examples. When I was Chancellor's Assessor in the University Court at Stirling, I was part of the group that fought to reduce the RUK fee from 9,000 to 6,750, and we won that fight. In March this year, a friend of my daughter's, a student at Edinburgh University, was faced with was arrested and threatened with deportation, and we got that turned over and got her visa. We won that fight too. And this summer, a student at the Adam Smith College in Kirkcaldy had a great fees difficulty, and I managed to help him with that. If instead of practicalities like these, you want to just send a political message, or if you want to reduce the role of rector to a fundraiser or a figurehead, then don't vote for me. Vote for somebody else. I came here to do a job. You'll probably hear a lot tonight about how people will represent students, how they'll be the voice of students. And I'm going to say right away that I won't do that. I won't be the voice of students. I'm not here to baby you. I'm not here to do all the hard things for you. You already have a voice. You elect your representatives, and every day students raise their voices for themselves. I won't presume to usurp that. But what I will do is deliver your voice directly to the heart of the governance of this university as chair of the university court. On behalf of almost 8,000 undergraduates and graduates, I will empower students by involving the 40,000 alumni, the people who have graduated. I spent a lot of time in St Andrews, and I've seen time and again students who know what they want. You know the direction you want your university to follow, and I'll chair the court and make sure that you are heard. A student told me they wanted the rector to be everybody's dad, and I said that was fine, apart from the lending money part. But I want to share something with you. I want to share what my dad taught me. He taught me to speak out, to use my voice. He taught me that you can change things, and that's the message I want to pass on to you tonight. St Andrews is only one of only four universities in the world where students get to elect the chair of the governing body. This vote is your right, and generations of students before you have fought to keep it. We have one day left. Use your right. Use your power. Go vote.
Thank you very much, Amanda. I'm Colin Fox, and like the other candidates, I'm delighted to be here with you tonight. I stand for the post of rector on what's clearly the most important issue in this election. The students have told, I'm sure, all the candidates the same answer, that the issue of the cost of your education is by miles the most important part of this rector elections. And I want to put in front of you from the outset that it's my belief that education and access to the very best education, like you have here at St Andrews, is a right and not a privilege. It's a right that belongs to everyone, not just to those who can afford to come here. I happen to believe that education in this country should be funded in the same way we fund the National Health Service, where we pay for it out of our general taxes. We pay for our fire service out of our general taxes. We pay for a police service out of our general taxes. But you, as students at this university, like your colleagues up and down the length and breadth of Britain, are getting a raw deal. You have to pay for your degree twice. You have to pay in your general taxes, like I did when I was a student. And you also have to pay for the education as an individual customer, as a student, your £9,000 top-up fees. And I stand in front of you and I say that's wrong. It's a retrograde step. And it's taking university education in the wrong direction. We don't, after all, say to patients when they're wheeled out of operations in hospital at Nine Wells, you've paid for your health service out your general taxes, now you have had your gallbladder out, you need to give us another 9,000. We don't say to the fire service who come to put out your house that's on fire, you paid for the fire service out your general taxes, but now that we've saved your house from burning down, you owe us another 9,000. But unfortunately, education we fund another way, and that is, in my view, incorrect and wrong, and I oppose it. And I'll do everything I can, working with yourselves, other rectors and other students, the length and breadth of Scotland and Britain, to make your voice in that matter heard as clearly and as plainly as I can. I want to say this also, if I can, it's clear to me in the course of this election that, as a candidate, I know as much about St Andrews University as any candidate standing in front of you. I've been coming here, man and boy, for 40 years. I came here as an MSP several times. I've been here many times in the 3 years since I stood as the rector in 2003. I know the university. I have a fondness for it. I admire it. I think it's world class. And I look forward to being the rector. But I finally want to say, Amanda, that I take this job seriously. I intend to be a working rector. I see your responsibility to me. I'm an elected representative of you, the students. And I take my responsibilities as an elected representative seriously. I'll be a working rector with weekly surgeries and regular reports, and I look forward to working with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Colin. Michael Forsyth.
It's nearly 37 years since I spoke in this building, and this building was new. And the library was new, and the sports facilities were new, and we had about 3,000 students. Now there are more than twice as many students, and the facilities look broadly the same. Why is that? I have some responsibility for the fact that we're having a rectorial election here at all. When I was a junior education minister, the university authorities put forward proposals to get rid of the rector because they didn't like the idea of the rector chairing the student, chairing the court and being a student. And I dropped that proposal from the legislation. And since then, I know that even here in St Andrews, there's been a suggestion that the rector shouldn't chair those parts of the court's proceedings which are concerned with the finances of the university. Now, I tell you, if you elect me, we're not having any of that. Because you need to have that voice, that very powerful voice, the student's representative chairing the court is a hugely powerful force for change. And I think there needs to be change at St Andrews. I think there hasn't been enough concentration on the facilities. You can't charge people very high fees and not have the facilities in place. And being realistic, you can't expect that to come from the government at the moment or from students through fees. So we're going to have to go out and we're going to have to raise the money. Now, Alistair says, in a kind of sneering way, about fundraisers. Frankly, this next 3 years, the 600th anniversary of the founding of the university, with the help of the Duke and Duchess, who are so committed to this university, is a huge opportunity for us to go out and raise the funds. And not just raise the funds, but tell the world about what a fantastic place St Andrews is, in order to attract the best academics and the best teachers, but also to bring in employers who will give jobs to people who come from this university instead of following the old prejudices that Oxford and Cambridge and one or two others are the best. So if you elect me as your rector, I will be a voice for St Andrews beyond St Andrews and within St Andrews, and I'll be a balancing action against the principal and others on the court on your behalf. And if you doubt that, I mean, this may make you decide not to vote for me, but is that 1 minute more?
30 seconds.
30 seconds. One of my great friends is Margaret Thatcher. Why am I a great friend of Margaret Thatcher? Because I stood up to her and argued with her, which she liked. And I promise you that if you elect me, I will be an effective voice on the court in taking up your interests and in following the welfare interests of the students. But the most important thing is actually to be a voice for St Andrews to the rest of the world.
Thank you. And now we have John Moore, who's speaking for Patrick Nevin.
Thanks, Amanda. Hi, everyone. I'm here speaking on behalf of Pat Nevin. We didn't decide to put Pat forward until about 3 or 4 weeks ago when he came through for a question and answer session with the sports clubs, with the girls and boys there. So he's a very busy man and has had a date in his diary speaking to the England Supporters Club down south in London this evening, and he's not someone that lets people down. So this evening he's not here tonight, but he's very sorry and I'll be stepping in place for him. Pat's main thing that he wants to get across first is that he doesn't want your celebrity vote. If you're voting for him because he played for Scotland and played for Chelsea, don't do it. He wants your vote because of what he's achieved since he's been playing football. He's been part of the anti-racism campaigns, anti-sectarian campaigns. He's also part of the Scottish Autistic Society. He's also done a lot of work for Football Aid. Going back to the Autistic Society, he raised £6 million in Fife. And obviously there's not a lot of money in some of these villages, so £6 million is a phenomenal amount of money. When Pat, if he were to be erected, he's not coming in with a big agenda. He's coming in and he wants to listen to what you guys have to say. So whether that be tuition fees, whether that be better sports facilities, better library, better union, that's what he will put across. But he wants to engage with the students, find out what they have to say, and then when he's chairing that court, he'll do his very best to put that message across to the other people in that room. With a specific regard to Pat is his sporting knowledge, and he's really important. And with the sports development, there are plans in place right now with the sports centre for 4G pitches out the back. There's tennis courts development. There's plans for a swimming pool. Pat is there to represent sport as well and really wants to push across that he wants to get these plans in place, because the sports centre is going places just now. Mostly people come to this university, and quite rightly so, for the academic experience. But more than that, we can now offer him a sporting experience. Furthermore, if he wants to develop the sports centre, he wants to develop the library. He also wants to develop the union as well. So when Pat, if he were to come in place, would listen to your views and would put them across in the court. That's all I've got to say.
Going to take questions from the floor. The candidates will have 2 minutes exactly to reply to those. We're also taking questions on Twitter on Patrick's account, which is at St A President. Yeah, for anyone who's listening on Star that can't be here. So yeah, any questions, please, Phil.
If it were true, it wouldn't.
Well, you can read it here.
Well, indeed I can read it here, and you will see that what it says, out of 8 votes in the House of Lords, I was absent from four of them, so that's 2%. And if you look at my voting record in the House of Lords, I think I was there for about 27% of the votes. And if I may say so, I've really enjoyed campaigning here in St Andrews. But one of the sour notes has been the attempt to try and brand me as homophobic, because I voted for a reduction in the age of consent from 21 to 18 and not 16, along with 90% of the rest of the members of the House of Commons at that time. And I have to say to you that I'm very much in favour of having a free society and a liberal society, and I don't think it does your cause very much good to try and brand people as homophobic when they're on your side.
Gordon Brown endorsing you, etc. Do you think these two things could affect your claims to impartiality and your claims to your commitment to the University of St Andrews?
Well, first of all, I had to resign as Chancellor's Assessor at the University of Stirling in order to stand as a rectorial candidate. That's one of the ordinances, and I think that says something about my commitment to this campaign, that I was prepared to do that. Much of the work of Stirling University is done in committee rather than in the court, and I was fully engaged in committee work at Stirling for all the time that I was there. With regard to impartiality, I was a public service broadcaster between 1981 and 1999, and although I retained my membership of the Labour Party, I wasn't in any way active because my job basically precluded that. Since I left Scottish Television, I've been more free to do what I wanted to do politically. And yes, I have supported the Labour Party in elections, and certainly I have got affiliations with Labour politicians, but I don't believe that that affects my impartiality in any way. If I'm elected to be your rector, I will represent everybody, including the people who didn't vote for me. That's what democracy is, and I would be delighted and happy to do that.
Say that my reputation in Scotland is not somebody who goes along with the easy decisions, but if you're referring to the fact, I was referring to the fact that on age of consent, when I was a member of the House of Commons, I voted for a reduction in the age of consent from 21 to 18. I didn't vote for 16. In the House of Lords, as our friend here will know from his researches, in the House of Lords that came back and I stuck to the same position of 18, and in fact 16-1, as you probably know, and I was defeated. So if nothing else, you might not agree with me, but I'm consistent. Does that deal with your question? And another example, if it helps you. I think I have voted against my own government in the House of Lords on six occasions this time, and that is a big change in my voting record, which has been generally loyal, and that is because there have been a series of measures which have come up before the House of Lords which have not been properly discussed in the House of Commons and which I thought were misguided. So I'm quite happy to speak out and take an independent view, but it is never possible to please all of the people all of the time. And I can't promise that I will represent you and your views on every issue to your satisfaction.
I'm a supporter for Alistair Moffat, and I was walking home last night when I came across three supporters of Pat Nevin who were chanting his name, and that's all fine. But when I said I was supporting Alistair Moffat, they became pretty belligerent and said some things, which is all fine, and then one of them pushed me against a car. And that's all fine. We're kids, we drink, we have scruples, but I'm pretty sure that man was you who pushed me against a car. And I was wondering what you think Pat Nevin would say.
I can only... I can only apologize. As you say, we were drinking and...
Thank you for applying.
This is a question to Mark, who is here on behalf of the beer. Clearly, she's doing some wonderful work in the charity sector. Were she to win rectorship, surely there would be some sort of conflict of interest there. Can I ask your comment on that?
Well, I've discussed it with her at length, and she doesn't feel that there's a conflict of interest. I'm afraid I don't know enough personally about conflicts of interest to be able to say anything more than that. So, but she's given me that assurance. Sorry, what did you say?
Well, commitment then, in terms of her time and the
amount
of effort.
She is. First of all, her record shows that she's never done anything by halves. She always gives 100%, and were it not for the fact that, you know, her, a member of her close family is very seriously ill, she would be here and she'd be able to answer this question for you. She promises to do everything that needs to be done. She also, she works for Mary's Meals 4 days a week and she manages her own diary. She's free every Friday, and that means that she'll always be able to make time for St Andrew's students. And she also pledges, as I was saying about, you know, it would have been good if we could have her on a video cast, she also pledges to be there for students in other ways when she can't arrange to be, you know, here immediately when a problem arises.
I'd just like to preface what I'm going to ask just by saying that I know John, and I know that when he apologises, he means it sincerely, because he's a man who cares very sincerely about what he says. My question is for Lord Forsyth. I'd like to say, first of all, that I'm really...
Do call me Michael Forsyth.
Sorry. My question
Lord,
is...
Lord, at least.
Question's for Mike. just to say that I'm really glad that you've raised the issue of financing, because I think it is something that's very important to this university, and I'm glad that a candidate has put that at the forefront of their campaign. But my question is about the university's fundraising in general. I understand that you're on the executive committee for the Alumni Club of St Andrews in London, is that right? Are you involved with the Alumni Club in London at all?
I've helped them.
Which leads into my question, which is, there are many, many thousands of graduates that the university has who are obviously committed to raising money for St Andrews and are in positions to do so. In what ways can you give any sort of assurance that your work alone as rector in that role would perhaps trump the thousands of people that the development office is working very hard on? And I guess, is that something that you'll continue to do whether you're elected or not?
Well, I don't want to be critical of the development office. I'm sure they're doing a fantastic job. But when I was at JP Morgan, I laid on a dinner for a lot of very senior people, and the follow-through was frankly not very good. I think you're absolutely right. St Andrews has a large number of graduates. In fact, if you look at the FTSE 100 companies and the people who see CEOs, we have an extraordinarily high number of them. I'm not sure that we've used that to the maximum benefit. And if behind your question is a rebuke of why were you not doing it earlier, I mean, I have a kind of rule that I will do something for 3 years. I mean, for example, with the National Portrait Gallery, I helped them to raise a lot of money when I was on their development board for 3 years. I'm currently on the development board of the Royal Society, which is the body, those of you who are scientists will know, is the body which is the key organization for scientists. I'm surrounded by Paul Nurse and Nobel Prize winners, and there we're trying to raise very substantial sums indeed. And one of the questions I've been asked going around St Andrews is, well, how often will you come to St Andrews? And I said, well, I'll come and chair every court, and I will come at least once a month. But actually, I think a large part of the job is in London and actually in New York, which is also where I am located in my job. So I don't pretend that I'm some kind of whiz kid who's going to make it easy, but I do think I've got a network and some skills and a track record which will add to the overall benefit. And of course, yes, I'm always happy to help St Andrews.
Question, because I was beginning to feel like the wee boy at the school dance that the little girl wanted to dance with. So I'm glad that I'm not going to wait and sit here all night and nobody asked me a question. And can I say one thing? I'm delighted, as I'm sure you are, that Lord Forsyth is with us tonight, and I genuinely say that, because on Tuesday night with the hustings that the rest of us enjoyed, and I was able to tell that husting something that Lord Forsyth wouldn't know about because he wasn't there. But this isn't the first time I've shared the platform with a Lord at St Andrews. I had a very great joy, if I can use that word, when I spoke here before. I had Lord Sewell, one of your colleagues from the unelected House of Lords, debating with me at the Debating Society, and Alex Salmond was there too. I don't want to name drop, but It was pointed out Lord Sewell was there, and in the order paper for the debate, I had been described erroneously as the Right Honourable Sir Colin Fawkes,
yeah,
MSP,
yeah.
Right? And I had to quote
only
Burns.
A measure of time.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure. You know, the Queen keeps offering me, and I keep turning it down. But I had to point out to the meeting that I actually offered the meeting a quote of Burns that actually wasn't a quotation from about Burns, but seemed the most appropriate, where I said, "Once a lord, always a lord. Once a knight was enough." Anyway, that's what I said on Tuesday, and I just echo that for Michael, because I thought it was a good joke and you never got to hear it. Could you remind me what the question is? No, actually, in terms of mediating, I have to be absolutely honest with you, and I differ from my colleagues here. I'm elected by students. I'm not elected by the Vice-Chancellor. I'm not elected by the Principal. I'm not elected by anybody else other than to the students, so my first responsibility has to be towards you. Where there are conflicts, I feel as if I'm quoting Martin Luther King or something like that here, I would hope that I could work with a university court, and I'm sure 9 times out of 10 there won't be a conflict. But where there is a conflict and where there's a difference of opinion between the university court, the establishment of the university and the students, my first call is to, you know, act on behalf of the students, be answerable to the students and seek your advice as how I should go forward. And I would hope that would be expected of someone elected, after all, in a democratic election. Thank you for your question.
I entirely accept it's not coming from your society. I've no idea where it's coming from, but there's been, you know, various people putting stuff on Wikipedia and sending stuff, and I just wanted to make it absolutely clear. And actually, I said to Matthew Short and my campaign team that if you wanted to have a chat with me afterwards or whatever, I mean, I see the role of the rector as representing the interests of all the students, and I would do that without fear or favour. And what people's race or religious conviction or sexuality, as far as I'm concerned, that is not a matter which is relevant or which in any way impedes that representational role. I slightly differ from Colin. I think the rector's job is slightly more subtle than being the student's representative on the court. By chairing the court, you have a huge opportunity to influence the agenda and influence the university authorities. And I'm sure there must be a large number of issues with which you and other societies are concerned. I mean, one of the things, if I talk about other things, I'll be getting off your question. But I just wanted to make it clear that I felt quite offended by the suggestion. I mean, I can quite understand why members of your society might think, well, why didn't you vote more strongly in a different direction? And I'm very happy to discuss these issues with you. I mean, I've been around in public life for 37 years, and the change in social attitudes is immense, and I regard that as a great move forward, and I have always been a part of that.
So.
It's a question for all candidates. If you could set up your own student society or club, what would it be and why?
Abir is very pleased to hear that there's going to be a Mary's Meal Society. So I'm not sure whether that should come as any surprise, and I'm not sure whether I need to explain why she would want that to happen. So I'll give you that as an answer.
I'd set up more than a society and a movement, a pressure group to reintroduce the insistence on having O-grade Latin to get into St Andrews University. It was an experience I shall never forget, and I'm determined that my movement in society will inflict it on every applicant.
Well, can I just say I done Latin at Our Lady's High School in Motherwell, and count me out of that society. I would.
I'll convert you, Colin.
Other people tried to convert me. I don't take that any further. But I'm involved with something called the Edinburgh People's Festival, and I know Alistair was involved with the Edinburgh Festival in his time, and I pay credit to him for that work. But the Edinburgh People's Festival is a organisation, a society, a charity. That's the word I was looking for, Amanda, thank you. It's a charity that tries to take the world's biggest arts festival to those disadvantaged areas of the city that host that festival. And it's a terrific work, I have to say, and myself is involved in it. And I'd like to try and establish a People's Festival Society at St Andrews to ensure that the same charitable purposes are offered to people who are disadvantaged. So to bring culture and the arts and celebration to people who don't get the chance to celebrate it as much as they should.
Well, I'll join you.
Of course, the rector's job is a non-political job, but I suppose I'd have to set up the big society.
One of Pat's greatest passions is Football Aid, which is a fantastic charity in which you pay, like, say you're a Manchester United fan, and you pay to play at Old Trafford, 11-a-side, the 11-a-side. You get your shirt put up in the change rooms, your name on the back, you gather some officials, there'll be a crowd there, and you basically get to live your dream and play at Old Trafford. And this is done throughout the country, Celtic Park, Hampden, Ibrox, everywhere in England as well. I think that he would be very keen to start something perhaps that could transfer that. We've got the old course here, St Andrews, with caddies, maybe like officials with your scoreboard up and stuff like that. I think you could transfer something in there and they'd really go from there and raise a lot of money as well for the university. So.
Question here.
For Alistair. You seem very adamant about helping individual issues, but how are you going to help the university as a whole and large groups of students who have bigger needs than perhaps the individual little things?
Give me an example. What do you mean?
Out of the three examples that you gave for helping students, they were all helping one individual case, which was more about being the parent of the student, not really about being responsible for getting their welfare, welfare of the masses.
I'll try and grapple with that. Basically, as I said, this is a democratic institution and you represent...
Can we have the question repeated, please, or summarised?
What I meant is that Alistair Moffat seems very keen on helping individual students on their everyday needs, but how is he going to help wider groups of students that have needs that are perhaps need a longer scope? Not necessarily in the short term.
Okay, thank you, that's better. Well, let me give you some examples. One of the things I've heard a great deal about is the cost of not only the fees here, but also the accommodation, and in general, the cost of living. Now, the university can affect at least two out of three of those, and I would push for cheaper accommodation. The university owns land west of the town. This is a planning matter in relation to Fife Council. There is a capital plan, a five-year capital plan the university has compiled, which includes cash for building cheaper and, in a key way, affordable accommodation. Now, I know you don't like detail, but one of the things I noticed when I've been staying out at Hepburn Gardens, I've forgotten how long Hepburn Gardens is, and people live at Fife Park and at DRA. Where's the shuttle bus that goes between the Union and DRA and Fife Park? I'm sure students would be happy to pay 20p a ride to save them 15 minutes, 20 minutes, half an hour of their day. And if more is built out in the West, that's going to have to happen. So I think accommodation is a big issue. The HMO cap, for example, which is affecting accommodation in the middle of town, we've done some work on that. At the moment, Fife Council are rejecting first applications for an HMO license, but if you appeal, it's granted, so you can break through that cap reasonably easily. That doesn't affect the price of accommodation in the middle of town, which is very high, but it does affect it somewhat. So those are, I guess, issues which affect everyone. And there are issues which I have thought deeply about, and I've talked to students about. I've listened to what students' concerns are, so I think I can look at a big picture, as well as a more detailed one.
fundraising. You mentioned earlier about perhaps your views differ about fundraising than the development office. I'm an undergrad biology student and we can only have three labs. I'm an undergrad biology student and we can only have three practical sessions a year due to lack of funds. And I know the development office is using the 600th anniversary funds to fund new guest professorships and other things like that that aren't really going to have a direct impact on my life as an undergraduate. How do your views differ to the development office that would increase proliferation of funds from such sources like the Duke and Duchess that would directly affect undergraduates?
Well, I don't know enough. I mean, I was only asked to stand about 2 weeks ago. By the way, I bumped into George Robertson, who was the Defence Secretary and the NATO Secretary General the other day, and he said, I was asked to stand. And I said, why are you not standing, George? He said, well, when I was at Dundee, I described St Andrews as a 14th century slum. And it would have been brought up. And I said, well, did you apologise? He said, yes, I did. I issued an apology. And I said, actually, it's a 15th century slum. Now, I mean, the answer to your question is, I don't know enough of the detail, but it's the key question. And it's the key reason why the rector not chairing the parts of the court which are concerned with finances has got to stop. Because if you are able to direct the money, that is where the power lies. And the balance between the needs of departments and the professorships, and the balance, I mean, we've got broad agreement here tonight that the sports facilities and the accommodation needs to be built. The trouble is there are big gaps. I mean, the sports people told me there was a gap of £7 million. On the accommodation, the money is not there. And so the money is going to have to be raised. And I think that it will be easier to raise money for things which directly affect the students and the quality of student life than many people imagine. So I think there has to be a balance, and I think it's a key role for the rector, not just in joining in trying to get people in here to raise the money, but also to ensure that the balance is in the students' favour. Now, the bad news for you guys is and girls is that you are not going to benefit from this. It's going to be the next generation of students, because it's going to take time to raise the money and to put it in place. But I do think it's an important priority. And if I'm elected, the first thing I'm going to do is to sit down with the university authorities and understand what the money is that's coming in, where it's going out, what the priorities are, what the strategy is, and to discuss that with the Student Association and the others, so that we can try and work together as a team St Andrews to make this what it can be, which is a world-class university that's in the top 50 in the world.
Could I break the rules and also answer the question? Because I have to say, I've got a bit of a concern. This debate so far has been dominated, as far as the funding of the university is concerned, by private donations from alumni. It should be borne in mind that the overwhelming majority of the funding for this university comes from public purses and it comes from students here. So I think it's important to rebalance this discussion and understand that the university has to get more money out of the public purse, and we have to address the question of why students are paying 9,000 from the rest of the UK, 13,000 from elsewhere. I'm not happy with a debate that's going to focus on how Michael Forsyth can go to JP Morgan with a begging bowl for St Andrews University, when the Treasury, the public purse, and your circumstances, the students' contribution to the funding, are far more important.
Would any of the other candidates like to reply to the question? Would any of you like to respond?
I think Abir has been very clear on this issue, and that is that she doesn't believe that the answer can lie with the government. It's just, I mean, Colin Fox may say what he has said about government funding, but he quite simply doesn't have the political power to achieve that. We have to remember that we are electing a chair of the university court. We are not electing a fairy who can wave a magic wand and solve all of the problems that exist outside this university. We need to make sure that we concentrate every effort that we can in the private sector, because we can always ask people to give us money. It's much more difficult if you don't have the political will supporting you in the country to actually achieve that through legislation or through government funding. And I think that's something which Abir would like to bring in terms of having an apolitical sense. The answer lies within the university, with its alumni, with whatever private donations we can get, because it's simply not feasible to expect government money to just appear out of midair, I'm afraid.
I think I'm going to amaze Michael Forsyth and agree with him about something, and that's it, his view on the governance of the university court. At the moment, that's split between the senior governor and the rector as chairman, and I don't think that's a good model. And I agree with Michael that I think you have to be across the finances of this university. That's the bloodstream, that's the sinews of the university. You have to understand these fully before you can make any pronouncement, I think, of any substance. And at the moment that is split, and I think it's wrong, and like Michael, I would sit down with the authorities immediately to change that.
I think what Abir's representative is very true as well, in the fact that these problems are external of the university, and that we perhaps do have to go down the fundraising route. And with Pat's history of successful fundraising for Scottish Autistic Society, his extensive contacts within the media, working for the BBC, working for Five Live, writing for the Times, writing for the Chelsea website, I think he'd be very good at raising this awareness and creating some funds.
What you said the other night about Trident or bailing out the banks, that's all stuff that's happened. I mean, that's not a realistic thing to talk about for a better position. So realistically, you said you'd like to get the fees down. You think that's a bad thing? Where is the money coming from? And if you do think you can raise the fees down from 9,000 to 6,000 or 3,000, where is the 18 million hole going to be covered from?
Well, thank you for that council of despair that nothing can be done and you shouldn't bother trying. The fact of the matter is, I asked the meeting that you attended on Tuesday. When I went to university, when Michael went to university, Alistair went to university, other people who went to university, the government gave you a grant to go to university. The government gave you housing benefit to go to university. It was paid out of your taxes. And now we have a position where the grants were taken away, housing benefit was taken away, the loans were reintroduced, The loans were introduced, top-up fees were introduced, the top-up fees became 9,000, and you'll remember, I'm sure, from Tuesday, so you look as though you've got a good memory. I asked that audience the same question I'd asked you. Hands up anybody here who thinks those tuition fees are going to stay at £9,000. Exactly, nobody. Because you know in your heart of heart the way things are going, there'll be 12,000, there'll be 15,000, there'll be 18,000. And in years to come, people will say, well, why didn't you do something about it when it was 9,000? Because we couldn't. Because it was a complete fait accompli, and the fact of the matter is, of course, it was a political decision, wasn't it, to abolish grants? It was a political decision by Michael's government that appears to rebel against. What, interrupting people? 9,000 top-up fees was whose government? Correct. It was Labour interrupted to use 9,000 by the consent. The point is, these are political decisions, and actually Michael, and I hate to set the tone where everybody seems to be agreeing with Michael. By the way, remember what everybody says, I agree with Nick and what happened to him, so maybe Michael's worried. But the point is, you have to have a view that this university can't pull up the drawbridge and become a wee island. We have to think outside of St Andrews. We have to engage with the Scottish Parliament. We've got a strong case, and I, for one, intend to put it to Alex Salmond, to the Scottish Parliament, to the Westminster Parliament, whoever else. And you ought not to expect me to do anything else. Thank you.
I'll take a question here.
Those of you that studied under directors when you were at uni. How was that, and did anything inspire you when you were there studying under directors that you were there that were in, sorry, do you get what I mean?
Yeah, okay. Well, if we start with Alison.
I mean, understandably, there's been a great deal of talk about money and the lack of it and where it ought to go and so on, but this university is not about money. It's about education, education, education. And that's what I got when I came here. It was the transformative power of education which changed my life. Undoubtedly, I grew up here, and it was meeting a cosmopolitan group of individuals, people from different backgrounds and different countries and different cultures, that really made me grow up. I stopped having preconceptions about people and began to value people as individuals, because that's how I dealt with them when I was an undergraduate here. And the quality of that education and the spirit of this place, I think, is something that's absolutely unique. And when I was here, it was an absolutely magical experience. And one of the joys of the last week of campaigning is that I've seen, despite all the storms that are gathering outside and the cold winds that are blowing, it is still a magical experience in a unique place for you. And that's something that I would urge you to value. I know there are problems, but remember the essence of this place, the spirit of this place.
Sorry, the question was about who was rector when you were at university and whether that inspired
well,
you.
I didn't hear that. I just heard the inspired thing. <that. laughs> And it was I already answered that. It was John Cleese.
Colin?
Well, I'd like to answer a question that I think I was asked as well. Actually, I was at the University of Strathclyde, and we didn't have rectors, did we? There's only five universities that have rectors, haven't they? But I have to say, looking at it as somebody who didn't have a rector, but it seems to be the job is much, much more seriously taken now than, if I can say, when John Cleese was elected. I don't know if he did a good job or not, and he done funny walks or not. I'm not sure I can comment on that, but it seems to be nowadays students expect a working rector, an elected rector to stand on their behalf and represent them at court and elsewhere. And I think that's right. Well done, students.
John Cleese was the rector when I was here, and I have to say I was very disappointed in him, because I thought he would be very funny and do lots of silly walks, but he turned out to be a really good, very serious rector. And I think he was responsible, I may be wrong, but I think he was responsible in his rectorial address for saying something very important. If he wasn't, he can take the credit for it. And he said, don't let your degree get in the way of your education. And that was the thing for me about St Andrews. When I came up to St Andrews, I thought I was a socialist. When I left St Andrews, I had completely different views. I mean, you may think that St Andrews made a mistake for me, but it changed my life, and it gave me a totally different outlook on life, and it gave me a brilliant education. There were lots of people who no doubt come up to St Andrews as conservatives and left as socialists. The point is that your ideas are challenged and you have a broad experience in a great community. That is something that's very special and we need to preserve.
Can you not really respond? I think you can really respond on the personal.
Well, no, Abir went to the University of Kent, which doesn't have a rector, so.
Sorry, the question is specifically for Michael, but I'd like to open it up to anyone afterward. You're running on a platform of fundraising, but you said you were asked to run a couple of weeks ago. I think that it's probably, in my opinion, should have been a high priority to look at where the money was going in the development office. I think as students, one of the most important things is I don't care how much money we raise, but I want to know whether it's going into the library or making a bigger library sign or going to someone's residence or what. And I think that's the main issue. I don't think the amount of money that we raise is the issue. So if you could address that.
Well, I totally disagree with that. I mean, the...
Can you repeat the question?
I paraphrase the question. The question is that it's more important to concentrate on where the money is going rather than having to raise more money.
The question is that I'm wondering why you haven't looked into where the money is going.
I have looked into where... Well, I haven't looked into the detailed plans of the development board. I don't know the details of whom they're approaching, what their strategy is for fundraising. But what I can tell you is that a short visit to the sports centre or the library, or to look at the accommodation problem, The problem is not how we spend the money. The problem is we haven't got the money we need to make this a world-class university. That is the problem. And in order to get that money, you can't just rely on graduates. We need to think much bigger than that. We need to think in terms of corporates and foundations and people not just in the United Kingdom, but beyond the United Kingdom. And we have to develop a narrative which will want them to invest in St. Andrews. So my approach to the development thing is to raise our sights and broaden our horizons.
Can I make a quick comment on that?
Yes, of course, yeah.
In response, I think that the university has seen a drop in our quality of education over time, and that we've been kind of riding on our reputation, and that reputation is going to be increased by higher fundraising, but the quality of education isn't going to be increased by simply raising more money or putting more money into the sports sector. So I think that it needs to be more targeted.
A separate question, and we'll have to just leave it to the original question for the others to answer.
I would like to put pay to this idea that it matters that the candidates for rector have checked out what all the issues are before they decided to run. The reality is that 3 weeks ago, I mean, Abir has been criticised on this score, and I think without any foundation whatsoever. The reality is that 3 weeks ago, the Students' Association encouraged us to put our houses in order and to get candidates to run in this election. We were told at the last, well, we were told earlier, but we were encouraged at a fairly late stage that there was still time to get a candidate in. And the reality is, it doesn't matter whether the rector knows what the issues are now. It matters that the rector can find out what the issues are, because in 2 years, we'll have completely different students, we'll have completely different SABs, and what will matter is that the rector is able to work out what the key issues are for students on that day and represent them in court. And I believe, contrary to what certain people have suggested, that Abir has those skills from her experience as a broadcaster and with Mary's Meals.
I think it's unrealistic to believe that in such a short period you can be across all the numbers. They are in any case not available. The university conducts its business privately, and we're not privy to the minutes of the court, or indeed privy to the financial workings of the university. So it's very difficult to do anything other than make broad statements.
Colin?
Can I say I think it's I really welcome the question, because I think the key to it is, I mean, looking around, I'm sure all the candidates have given as much time as they can, went down, we visited the library, we visited the sports association. One of my friends before mentioned the deficiencies he's found in the biology department. I've seen deficiencies in halls. The quality and the development of accommodation hasn't been done. And I'm sure all the candidates will agree that this is particularly disappointing as we approach the 600th anniversary of the university, to see these so obvious deficiencies in the quality of education that's provided for the students. And I think, I would hope all the candidates would agree that the rector's role surely must include the opportunity, indeed the demand, the request by students to speak out about this, both in the court and elsewhere. And I have to say, again, with a wider vista than just the university, I think it's a bit rich of Lord Forsyth, to be honest, to talk about the cuts, quite rightly highlights them, but he abrogates any responsibility for these cuts and as a public service, and is a member of a government that's carrying out the most draconian, vicious and brutal cuts in public services we've seen in a generation. Well, he's disowning the party now.
He's disowning
the government. He's in the House of Lords, and he's a member of the Conservative Party. I know that's not a great revelation to you, but I think by association that's a fair comment.
Thank you. We are going to have to finish up pretty soon, but does anyone have any questions that are on a slightly different topic at all? Yes, Chloe?
So money's been thrown around like confetti tonight, so I'd like to bring it back to students now at the end of the year's time. Considering the university's unsupportive position, what is your view on student political activism and how will you help us in that?
Can I just stand up and hopefully hear me better? I would encourage students to get...
I'm just starting with people who... we've had Mark start and then Alistair start, so...
Start the clock again, that's half my minute gone. I'd certainly want to encourage all students to get involved in political activity here, but if I can turn it to this and say, I've been struck in my time that I've been here of the excellent job that your sabbatical officers do here for the university. I know that that's a widely held opinion. I've been to many universities, I can assure you, and it's not often the case that students will come up to me and say how much they admire the work of the sabbatical officers, the SRC, the president and the other office bearers. And I'd like to put on record, I'm sure they don't get much plaudits, that they deserve it. I think they have a good reputation and they work very hard. I know Patrick here and Dave and the others have met here. I'm grateful for their opportunity and the time they've given me. I'm sure they've afforded it to the other candidates to learn about the issues, as Mark said. And I think that's to their immense credit. And I think the students here are, you know, well served by the sabbatical officers. And I'd only say that as a rector, it would be my intention to work as closely as I possibly can with them. Hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
It's great for people to get involved in student politics and student activism. But my own view is there's something very special here in St Andrews. And I think if the students and the university authorities work together for a common agenda and use the opportunity of the 600th anniversary, we can transform this place. I know from, and by the way, you know, we weren't allowed to start campaigning till last Friday, but I know from listening to people that there are some issues and complaints about the way the principal and the university have behaved. And I think these need to be addressed, and I think it's part of the role of the rector to be a candid friend and advisor to the university authorities, and that includes the principal.
Thank you.
I think Pat's main message that he's wanted to get across in the past week is that he's wanting to listen to the students. So any political activism and forward thinking from students, he'd be more than willing to encourage. So with regards to that, with listening, he came here 3 or 4 weeks ago to do a Q&A with a few of the boys and girls in the sports centre, and he was really taken aback by the stand of intellectual questions that were given to him, nothing like he's previously done before. And he'd only, I suppose, want to encourage that in the future if he was to be rector over the next 3 years.
I know that Abir is very keen, particularly with regard to the rectorship, to make sure that students are more vocal about the issues that they have. We heard Alistair mention on Tuesday how when he came here, you know, there were big protests and that kind of thing. She wants to make sure that she is able to encourage us to really engage with her as rector so that she can engage with the university and make sure that the issues which our sabbatical officers have are championed at court. I think also that she wants to make sure that we are able to actually express ourselves properly. She's felt a real disconnect between what students think and what is actually being dealt with, and she definitely wants to make sure that we are able to say how we feel and expect real things to come of it.
One of the most striking things I've noticed when I've been talking to students in the last week is that there is an atmosphere, frankly, of intimidation as far as the university is concerned. I've spoken to the presidents of several political societies and indeed charities who find students reluctant to be involved in action, in activism, because they think the university will look down on that and may indeed penalise them. Reputational damage is the phrase that I've heard. And I think if that's the case, that ought to change. This is a place where you can express yourself. It's where you form your politics and your ideas. And to find people who feel discouraged because the university will somehow come down on them if they organize an occupation or they organize a demonstration is, to my mind, something that negates the very idea of a university. And I think this is an attitude, a part of St Andrews life that needs to be looked at very carefully.
Charlotte Baker. Hi, I am President Mermaid and Vice President of Law Society, and over the course of campaign
Well, I think I think there's a great deal that can be done by the rector in trying to attract speakers and people to come and become involved with the societies. And I think the answer to your question is I think I'd probably want to sit down with you for 20 minutes and hear your ideas on what could be done, along with others. Because off the top of my head, other than saying I'm willing, I can't actually identify specific issues which perhaps you could help me by thinking what you have in mind. But I think attracting speakers here and attracting people to St Andrews, there are far too many people, when they think of St Andrews, they think of golf, rather than thinking of a world-class university. And I think the societies have a big role to play in that. I mean, I've come here to speak for various societies over the years, and one of the things that's very striking when you come here is that you leave elevated by the response that you get from the students. And I don't want to sound patronizing, but the students nowadays are very different, very much more serious, very much more focused, and very much more informed than they were in our day, Alistair. I think you probably agree with that.
I think I'd have to agree with Michael on that. Pat's main thing is to listen. So you sit down with societies and engage with them and find out what they think. Because at the end of the day, the people within that society will probably have the best idea of how to expand the society and get it better known throughout the university and then furthermore within the country and the UK. So yeah, to sit down with them and just engage with the societies. And Pat, the thing is with Pat, is only, we've only been campaigning since Friday. Pat was here on Tuesday, we had a very busy schedule and we should do a lot of interviews. So not being able to meet with every society throughout over the week, it's been a case of the time constraints. But when, once you get elected rector, you have 3 years. And the first thing I'm sure you would want to do would be to engage with societies and see what their ideas are. Because I think the students as well, they have great ideas for societies.
There are 149, I think, affiliated societies now, and that is a particularly knotty issue. And I think Abir's commitment to using 21st century technology to reach out to students is the right kind of answer towards that kind of situation. We're not expecting a full-time rector. We're expecting a rector who engages with us, but it's simply not reasonable to expect any of the candidates here to get through all 149 societies in, you know, like an in-depth interview. So I think Abir's commitment is to make sure that she keeps gathering information using the latest technology to make sure that she knows exactly what the issues are, obviously liaising with the Director of Representation, Director of Student Development and Activities, sorry, to make sure that the issues that affect societies are looked at as a whole.
One of the things I've been also struck by is the fact that when I was here and when Michael were here, compared with you guys, we were lumps, frankly. I mean, you are amazingly active. The society, the scene seems to me to be terrifically vigorous. And I think what a rector does is to try to enrich that in all sorts of ways by using their own contacts, their own life experience. We were talking to the rugby team this afternoon. I'm a director of the Bill McLaren Foundation, and I was telling the coach what he could do through the foundation. I was involved in television for 20 years. I did the Festival Fringe Society. All of these things connect very closely with what many of the societies are doing here in St Andrews. And I think the job of the rector is to use his or her contacts and his or her life experience to enrich the work. It's a terrific aspect of life at St Andrews, and as I say, we were herbivores compared with you guys.
Can I just say three things quickly, Charlotte? I would advise in future, all societies in future rector elections, contact all the candidates and ask them to come and meet you. You do it and ask them to come and meet you. I think it would be easier and be better for the candidates as well, because they're what we all try to do in the week that we're here, and between nominations and the election result is to meet as many students as we can to gather information and talk to you. On a wider general point, if I can just say this, I think the days when Michael and Alistair were at university, the difference was, I mean, I suspect that the difference then and now is students now are more serious because you go from tutorial to lecture to work in Starbucks. This is an experience that wasn't the case 30 years ago. You were much more involved and you were much more encouraged to be involved in the wider university life, and you had that chance. And I think the time you spend while you're at university working for Starbucks is to your detriment as far as your university experience is concerned, but unfortunately a necessity as far as your finances is concerned. And I think that's, again, detrimental. On a personal level, my attitude would be, if any society needs help, come and talk to me and I'll do what I can to help. You'll find I'm accessible and I'll do all I can, because I want to see as many societies flourish just in the same way you do. Thank you.
Thank you. We are going to have to finish up quite soonish. I've had a question on Twitter, though, which is for all of the candidates, which is quite simple. How much time are you pledging to spend in St Andrews if you're elected as rector? Beginning with...
Two days.
A month?
Yeah.
Yep.
Abira has signed the charter. She's pledged to visit St Andrews at least twice a month. She only lives an hour down the road, so she is perhaps best placed to make sure that that is actually a reality. She's also willing, as I've already said, to make sure that she engages with you. Sorry. Do you want me to start again? All right. Abir has pledged to visit St Andrews at least twice a month, having signed the rectorial pledge. She also lives less than an hour away, so she's perhaps best placed to actually be in St Andrews when it matters. And she's also, as I've already said, pledged to make sure that when she isn't here, she is available through the latest technology to make sure that she is able to engage with you and represent you fully.
We all signed the rector's pledge, which is a very clear job spec, and part of that was a minimum commitment of 2 days a month. That will be more, there's no question. There are court meetings, there are graduations, there are all sorts of activities that I suspect will bring me to St Andrews more often than that.
I've pledged in my material, you've all read it, I'm sure, to be holding a weekly surgery for students as the rector for 3 years. I was an elected member of the Scottish Parliament for 4 years, and I gave a commitment to my constituents to hold a weekly surgery. I did so every Friday afternoon, and I give that commitment to the students that I'll be here for a weekly surgery during my 3 years as a rector of St Andrews.
I'm not going to come here and hold surgeries on individual student problems. I think you have a very good welfare system, a very good students' association. If students have particular problems, having gone through all the resources that are available to them, then of course I will take up their cases. I'll come here to chair court meetings, and I'll certainly be in St Andrews one day a month. But as I said to you earlier, I think the job of the rector is also outside St Andrews, being done in London and in other parts of the world, and I will be committed to that. And I don't think, if you want the sort of rector who is going to be like a local councillor or a constituency MP, that is not me. I see this as a much broader strategic job to represent the interests of the university and the students during this unique 600th anniversary year. That is where my skills are. That's where I can add value. You've got plenty of people who can do the casework and so on and so forth. Having said that, if people feel the system's not working, I want to hear about it.
Okay, everyone, it's almost 8:30, so we are going to have to finish up now. We'll take... Can we? Okay. I'm going to take two more questions, and you're not having the first one. I'll take one over here from Vladimir.
Good evening, distinguished candidates. First, I would like to say thank you for your involvement in this, and I do hope that whoever...
Yes.
Okay. Firstly, I would like to say thank you to the candidates for their involvement in this, and I hope whoever wins will make this university justice, as it does deserve a considerably higher recognition of the world community. And from this, I would like to follow on. As part of an international community within the university, I'd like to ask the candidates to talk about how they see that international community within St Andrews developing within their 3 years, and how they would like, how they would act upon it to interact with that community. And mostly that would go to Mr. Forsyth, who wants to bring out St Andrews into the world and to establish it as a world-class university.
Is the question to all candidates?
Yes.
Yes. Okay, well, if we begin with... Yeah. Can you start? Yeah.
What I think is interesting about St Andrews is its multicultural nature, and during the campaign I've made a particular point of talking to different groups. I had a long meeting with the Hong Pao Society, the people who represent Chinese speaking students in the university. I went to the Model UN and talked to them. I've talked to the Russian Society, and one of the great things about St Andrews is the experience that you can have of all kinds of cultures in one place. It's a tremendously attractive aspect of it, and something, if I was elected rector, I'd like to nourish and encourage.
I do apologise. I'm the president of the Russian Society, and unfortunately I haven't spoken to you.
Well, I spoke to two of your colleagues in that case who want to organise a Russian festival. Grace and... can't remember the other person's name.
Can I just say, what an interesting name, Vladimir. What an interesting name, what an interesting question. Like Alistair, I think one of the many fascinating and highly attractive parts of St Andrews is the diverse nature. People from all over the world coming here. I found it, even in the last week in the course of the elections, fascinating to meet people from all over the world, at Albany and Five Park, all the different halls of residence, and the attitudes and the principles and the point of view that they have. Most engaging, most interesting, and I bring the social democratic values we have in Britain, for example, to countries from, you know, the students from North America who bring a different outlook about education and healthcare and things like that. I think it's a very attractive part of what the university is about. And I have to say, I hope that the university's international students have participated in this rector election as much as everybody else, and I would do as much as I can to encourage them to feel this university belongs to them as much as it belongs to anyone else. Thank you.
I think I'd want to reflect on that a bit. It's a big change, you know. When I was here, there were Scottish students and English students and not actually that many international students. It's one of the big changes to St Andrews. I think I would want to try and use the fact that we have so many different groups from different countries to send out the message about what is going on in St Andrews and encourage people to come here to teach, to speak, to be involved in the academic life of the university, perhaps to fund. And one thing that we haven't touched on tonight, which I think is absolutely vital, I mentioned it very briefly, is we now operate, whether we like it or not, in a global marketplace. And most of the big firms that are recruiting students are doing so in an international marketplace. And I think being able to use the diversity of societies, international societies in St Andrews, to communicate to employers the very special thing that is here in St Andrews could be or benefit to students from every part of the world who are students here as they come to think about their careers. Now, this is not a naked appeal to third year students in the audience tonight, but I do think I know it, because when I was at JP Morgan, I used to say to them, why do we just go to Oxford and Cambridge? Why do you think that? And of course, the answer is because a lot of them in Britain had been to Oxford and Cambridge. and of course, now in these organizations where there's an international dimension, I think presenting St Andrews as a place which is that kind of community will make it much more attractive for recruitment and so on and so forth. And then the last part of the answer is, I'd love you to tell me what we could do to emphasise this. The thing, and this is where I'm going to lose the votes of the Scottish Nationalists, the thing I cannot stand about Scotland as a Scot and somebody is this was like us, damn few, and were our deed, inward-looking attitude. We have to be outward-looking, because that has been the Scots tradition. That is how Scotland became the country that it was, and this university reflects that.
I think that the fact that we've got such a diverse nature within this university, we can only work as an advantage in spreading that how much of a world-class university it is throughout the world. Just a quick example, like for instance tomorrow night with Pat, he does a show on Radio 5 Live, BBC Radio 5 Live every evening. The results of this rectorial election are going to go on BBC Radio 5 Live to millions of viewers within the UK. That's an example of how Pat can extend the messages out towards the people in the rest of the UK. We also have to take into account that over the next 3 years is our 600th anniversary. And through engaging and listening to what the students have to say and their ideas on how they would like the 600th anniversary to go out to the rest of the world, it will better this university's reputation and hopefully achieve the status of world class and get throughout the global situation.
I think Abir would feel that the international students at this university are part of the charm of the university, something which is to be celebrated as much as the 600 years. But I think there's something more important that we need to think about here, and the reason that we have so many international students is because this university has now an excellent reputation throughout the world. But in meeting students this week, she has discovered that perhaps that reputation is under threat. And you never know, it might cease to become less of an attractive option in future years because of things like the fact that the library doesn't have enough books in it. It has a lovely carpet now on the first floor, some would say, but it doesn't have enough books, for example. So I think she would be very keen to make sure that this place remains attractive to the best and brightest students from all over the world.
Okay, we are going to have to stop soon because it's getting pretty difficult to be heard. I'll take the question here.
As a self-funding mature student, I look forward to Colin Fox representing my views on the court. That would be excellent. I'll give him my list later on. Actually, he'd be wasting his time doing that, and I think also he'd be wasting his time fighting the national government in Westminster and the Scottish government. And my question really focuses on what it is that any of these candidates will achieve. What is the single thing they think that they can achieve with this obscure and unclear managed organisation we call the university? What is the single thing they would hope to achieve in their 3 years in a change in this university?
Start with Mark.
Abir is very clear on that. She wants to put students first. I've spoken about that in some detail, and I don't really feel that I should say any more about that. But thanks for your question, Peter.
I think the single thing that I'd like to see students achieve with the help of their rector is to take power in this university. You are the university, not the buildings, not the bureaucracy, not even the lecturers. You are the university. And that's something that appears to me to have got somewhat forgotten in all of this. You have real power as a student, and you can express that power through your rector. You have the power, I believe, to raise money for the Students' Association, which the Students' Association can disperse, not the university. I think the single theme that I would push is the empowerment of students.
Can I say that my attitude is, what can I achieve? What can I change? What change do I look to achieve in the next 3 years? I put it simply that I want to improve, indeed I want to raise far higher on the university's priorities, the concerns of students at this university, the needs of the students at this university, on their funding, on their accommodation, on the library, on the courses, on the quality of university education that they currently receive. And it's clear to anybody with eyes to see that that's not anywhere near the case presently with the university's court and the way it goes about its business. That's the fundamental change I stand for, would hope to achieve. Thank you.
I'd like to build a team, St Andrews, which is the university authorities and the students working together for the benefit of the university as a whole. In practical terms, I'd like to see at St Andrews, by the time I finish being rector, the the stuff on the ground actually happening to ensure that students enjoyed the same quality of facilities and support as I enjoyed when I was a student here. And I don't think you're going to do that by dividing people. I think we have to have a common agenda and a common purpose, and that means all of us have to work together for that and use this unique opportunity of the 600th anniversary to demonstrate to the founders of this great institution that the enterprise and the determination which has created this institution today still resides in the students and the staff and the university authorities.
I think you say one thing to achieve. I think that's got to be representing the university and the students as a whole to their best abilities. And the only way to do that is to listen to what they have to say. And by doing that, when Pat comes in as rector, if he does, then he would listen to what the students have to say, engage in what they want to say, want to be done, and represent them on that court. And that's ultimately what the rector has to do. I don't think you can come into this job with a previous agenda lined up. There's no way that anyone could have spoken to as many students by now to understand what is needing to be done. Once put in that position, then you can achieve what the students want to achieve. And that's what the job of the rector is portraying those views across in that university court.
So we'll start with the 3-minute closing statements in reverse order, starting with Pat Nevin.
I'd just like to start again by apologising on Pat's behalf for him not being this evening. It underlines his commitment that he doesn't let people down by the fact that he did have a previous engagement up until now. When Pat first came to speak to the students at East University about 4 weeks ago, before he knew anything about the rectorial election, He always stressed that there is a reputation this university has outside St Andrews. Perhaps it is a little bit snobbish, elitist. And what Pat, when he came in and spoke to the students, he found there was none of that whatsoever. He really engaged with the students and really enjoyed what they had to say and was open to all the ideas that they were bringing forth. That's what makes Pat want to be this rector. He wants to represent you. He wants to get out that message that we are a world-class university, but also we've got a fantastic student base. I think that his credentials of being a chief executive of Motherwell, the chairman of the PFA Players Association, also working in the media for the BBC, the Times, and other such sources, makes Pat an excellent candidate for rector. I'd also just like to take this opportunity to say that I think this has been a fantastic electoral campaign, and the more, if we can get above, like, what was 29% attendance for the rectors last time, if we push that out and get everyone voting, I think that's the main thing that has to be come from this, is it's been a great campaign, all the elected have really gone up for it, and I just want to stress the importance that we need to get people voting, because at the end of the day it's a democratic vote, and we want to be represented as well as we can as students in that university court.
I make my living giving people advice, and I hope I could just give you some free advice, because listening to all the candidates tonight, they've all got qualities, and it's fantastic that the rectorial still produces people who want to come and help the university in this way. So my advice to you is this: work out what you think you want the rector to do and what you think the function is, and then from that you can work out who the best candidate is. And my pitch is that the rector has to be a strong representative of the students on the court, that the court has to be chaired by the rector so the student interest is paramount, and the rector has to pull the university together in order to project out the benefits of the university and in order to attract investment in. And that's a big job. And you need certain skills and qualities to do that. And I think having been a local government councillor, which will help with the housing stuff, and having been a member of parliament, and having been on the boards of companies, and having even been a banker, which is perhaps not a popular thing to be these days, but it's probably slightly more popular than being a politician. But all these skills are the skills which I think are needed to do that kind of job. If, on the other hand, you see the rector as being more of a kind of student representative who gets involved in day-to-day issues, that's not me. And there are other candidates who will fulfill that role. But I just beg of you, understand, please,
that the rectorship is something quite unique to the Scottish universities. And for years and years and years, the university authorities have tried to undermine it because it is a powerful voice for the student population. And the caliber of the person that you elect will determine how well that office acts in the interests of the university and the student body as a whole.
Thank you very much. Well, friends, can I say that St Andrews University is like nowhere else there is in the world? In the course of this campaign, I was described by one of the newspapers as the cuddly fun candidate. I've never been described as the cuddly fun candidate before, and I immediately raised it with my campaign team that there must be a misinterpretation of the programme that we put in the back of the election leaflet. But I have to say, I agree with those candidates here who've rightly said to you, this is an election about change. St Andrews University needs to change. The student's representative, the rector, needs to enforce or bring that change to pass, to bring the change that you want to happen. That's agreed with us all. The question in front of you is, what kind of change is it you want, and who's the best candidate to effect that change? And I have to say to you, it's a choice that you face. You have to consider for yourself whether you want change for the worse or change for the better. I have to say, as I repeated earlier on, the most important issue in this rector election remains and has been throughout the issue of the cost of your education, how it's funded and how you pay for it. And it's the responsibility of the rector to ensure that your concerns, your anxieties and your circumstances are made clear to that university court and they're acted upon it. And I want to say I disagree with Lord Forsyth. You won't find me in New York when I'm the rector. I'll be spending my time at St Andrews and in Edinburgh, here at the university and at the Scottish Parliament and if necessary at the Westminster Parliament, arguing for more public funds for this university and argue against the indebtedness that students find themselves in at the UCL University and others. And can I say finally, I intend to be, and I hope I've made it clear, I intend to be your elected representative at this university, available, accessible for you. I don't stand here with the intention of being an absentee landlord that you'll never see again over the course of the next 3 years. That as much as a clear choice I think has been spelled out for you tonight. But can I say, just as Pat's representative says, I'd finally want to say that I think this has been a tremendous election. I want to pay tribute to all the candidates and their campaign teams who in fact been a credit to themselves in the way that they've conducted the election, raised the issues, disagreed when you had to and not fallen out. That's important in politics. You can disagree with people. I disagree profoundly with Lord Forsyth. I disagree profoundly with Annabelle Goldie, but Annabelle Goldie described me when I was in the Parliament as the most charming socialist she'd ever met. That was good enough for me. Thank you very much.
Despite feeling like we've had a debate in a particularly busy bus station, and I had to bellow at you for an hour and a half, I agree with Colin. I think all of the candidates here, if elected, will serve this university well. And I'd also like to pay tribute to all of the campaign teams. It has been civil and fun and interesting. So thank you all for that. I think the tradition established by Kevin Dunyon and Simon Pepper of a working rector is enormously important given the challenges facing education, given the challenges facing students at the moment. You must be here. You must be on hand to help. You must be here to debate, and you must be here to be involved. The universities have long believed that the Office of Rector is a pain in the backside, and I promise you, I will continue, if elected, to be a pain in the backside to the university. Kevin Dunyon has done a terrific job as a working rector, and he'll be a very, very difficult and hard act to follow. And a break with the traditions that he created and Simon Pepper created would be more than regrettable in my view. Finally, I want to say that because of my own personal experience as a graduate and my family's experience of this university, I feel that I understand something of the spirit of this unique place, and I think that that is vital. If you are going to represent St Andrews, you must understand this wonderful, magical place, and I believe that I do, and I believe that passion matters in all areas of activity, whether you're raising funds, whether you're trying to sort out students' difficulties, whether you're dealing with the university court. Passion is important. I can say without a trace of awkwardness that I love this place, and if I was elected its rector, it would be an enormous privilege, one of the greatest privileges of my life. Thank you very much.
On behalf of Abir, I would like to reiterate the statements made by the other four candidates about the quality of this election campaign. It's marvellous to have had four other candidates to compete against. That's how important the rectorship is. But ultimately, it's not about the candidates. It is about you. And she believes that she has the skills to make sure that the rectorship for the next 3 years can be about you. Her experience with broadcasting, with journalism, and with Mary's Meals has shown that she not only has the passion and the drive to achieve this goal of making sure that we are all fully represented, but also that she will be able to actually achieve that for us. Of course, it has her experience of meeting people over this past week of campaigning has been the issue of access. And she really does want to make sure that not just for people who aren't here, but for people who are here, that this is the best experience that it can be. And that's why she really wants to strive to make sure that every single voice is heard and heard at the university court. She doesn't have any she isn't under any misapprehensions about what she can achieve. She doesn't want to turn this role into something which doesn't exist. She doesn't want to take on big politics or big business. She wants to make sure that the students of the university are at the heart of the debate. She was telling me about her dismay about the 9,000 fees and about the dreadful way in which it was discussed out of term. The sabbaticals were only given 2 days notice. All that kind of thing, she wants to make sure that she is able to stop. Less than 2 days, okay. So I've heard 1 day, I've heard 2 days. She wants to make sure that if anything like that comes up, she will make sure that good time is taken over to make sure that things are properly looked at. And the last thing, I think she wants to... She's very aware of the university's history. She's looked back into the last 600 years, seen people like J.M. Barrie, John Cleese, Catherine Whitehorn, who has to date been the only female rector of this university, and Kevin Dunyon. And she wants to look with confidence into the next 600 years and make sure that we get them off to a good start.
Thank you for all your questions. Thank you also to Tristan from staff for organising all this and broadcasting that. And I think you'll join me in thanking all the candidates for coming here tonight. And don't forget to vote. It's online till tomorrow at 5.
So it's just to say that tomorrow there will be polling stations here, computerised polling stations, here in the physics building and at the library from 9 to 5 or probably 9 to 1 at physics. But 9 to 5 here, 9 to 5 in the library. So please come along, make it colourful, try and bring a little bit of that election day spirit along as well. So, thank you.